from La Mesa. Yeah!
My name is Roger McCarlin. Thanks, Larry, for inviting me over here. I know about this meeting from the conception, and it's a pleasure to be here and try to show what alcoholism or what sobriety can do to a guy like me. You know, I have found a way of life here that I really enjoy and don't want to part with it, so I have to do the work to be able to stay here, you know. And if it was a lot of work, but it's pleasure, you know. So it's very easy to stay sober and participate in Alcoholic Anonymous and do-do-do and dung-da-da, you know. And I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know that before I came here. And I never drank in the armed service, never drank in college, never drank in high school. Because I never been in service, never been to college, never been to high school. If I had, I probably would drink because I was drinking during those years, you know. And I drank for about 20 years. The first seven was pretty much fun. The next seven was fun with trouble. And the last seven was nothing but trouble, you know. And that's how alcoholism get hold of you and then don't want to let you go, you know. It's just like a curse, you know. And but I didn't know. I didn't know about alcoholism. I didn't know about what I can remember as a kid. I remember I was raised in a farm in eastern Canada, and I had seven brothers and three sisters. And one thing I can recall is a Sunday afternoon, we're all out there playing ball. And my brother and sister don't want to play right. They didn't want to follow the rule that I had set down. And so my mother told me, if you can't play with them, you know, go to your room. And my room was the second story, and I was looking down on them. They were playing ball without me having fun and all that, and I was stuck in my room. There's something wrong there, you know. And that was the... basically, the story of my life, you know. I take charge of things, and nobody want to listen to me. And I end up by myself, and that went on and on and on. And I couldn't wait to get out of there, you know. I used to go to the top of the farm, and you could see forever, you know, 75 miles away. And there was a hill there, and I want to go see what over that hill was, you know. And if I can get old enough, I'm going to go see what over that hill, you know. And I did. And you know what there was over that hill? Another hill. I went all the way to the West Coast, and it was full of hill. And anyway, when I was, my folks, my mother make beer in the, during the springtime, the summertime. We'll work on the farm, and when it get hot during the day, my father will stop during the middle of the day and have a glass of beer. And he'll give us kids some. And my two brothers that was next to me, they didn't like that, so I drank dirt, you know. I mean, you gotta clean those glasses. And one day I remember that I was... maybe at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was worn out. I worked hard. I was small and kind of anemic, and I worked real hard, and I just couldn't go no more. I just couldn't go. My father saw that, so he took me to the basement, and he gave me a bottle of beer. He said, sit here and drink that. He said, we're going to make another load, and next load, I came over and pick you up. Well, I sat down, and I drank that bottle of beer. You know, it was nice and cool in the basement. When I see him open the door for the next load, I jump up, you know, get out of the way, old man, I got some work to do, you know. That beer has really gave me the energy and what I needed to finish the day, you know. And that became pretty well the story of my life, you know. If I was down, something happened, I drank, and I had to learn how, because I couldn't control it. I couldn't never know when I had enough, and... So I decided, you know, I'm going to take the time need. I'm going to invest in this thing. I'm going to learn how to drink. And I should have went to school. me as a teacher didn't work. So I, at the age of 70, I managed to leave home, and my father let me go, and, you know, I was going to go see the city and what's going on in the world. You know, I was 17 years old. I had never seen a street light. And we ran around the horse and buggy, and, you know, we had a lot of stuff to do. You know, we trap, and we hunt, and fish, and all that, but I knew how to run a team of horse and all that, and cut some pulpwood and all that, but I didn't know how to live an outside life. I didn't know how they did it in the city, you know, and I want to learn that. I want to learn the English language, so I moved to Toronto, and they wouldn't let me to the bar there. And so I wrote to my mother and told her that I needed a birth certificate that showed that I was 21 years old, otherwise I couldn't get a job. So she went to the priest and they sent me one. But that was to get in the bar. I already had a job. That was no problem. I am the type of a guy that can go into a city when the employment is 99%, the next morning I'm going to have a job. I can smell work wherever it's at. You know, I never had a problem getting a job. I always managed to do that pretty well. And I stayed in Toronto for a while until I learned a little bit of English, and then my father needed some help. He had 8,000 maple trees in the state of Maine. That was close to my village, and I went over there, and I got drunk, and I had a new car, and got a car accident, put a couple of guys and me in the hospital, and one of the guys that was with me, that was not hurt, died a week later, and the insurance company wanted to blame that on me, and I hide in the state of Maine to do the season. And right after that, I left. I went to Mexico for a while. I mean, you know, learn how to run. Learn how to run. You know, you stay there and take care of anything. You know, you just move. And that became my way of life for a few years, you know. If it didn't work right here, I'd go someplace else, you know. They didn't really need me there. I didn't need them. And I tried to had enough sense to sit down south in the winter, in Florida or California or whatever, and go back to Canada in the summer and, you know, move around. I don't think for 4 or 5 years that I slept more than 1 month in the same bed. You know, I just move on. And I thought I was a traveling man. I didn't know that I was scared. That's why I move on. It's not because I was a traveling man, you know. And in 1959, I was 22 or 23 years old then, and I was tired. So I decided, you know, when you travel like that, you're broke all the time, and you don't eat regular, and your health is not that good. You know, I came to San Diego, I tried to give some blood, they wouldn't take it. And it was 2 weeks, and I was not used to eat 3 meals a day anymore, you know, just whatever come along. And so I just said, well, I'm going to change that. I'm going to sit here in San Diego, get me a job, get married, and get an apartment, and take care of business, you know, and I done that. I met a gal, and we got married, and we got an apartment. I had a job, and got a car, and everything started to look pretty good, you know. Put the drinking aside for a while, you know. Didn't do that conscientiously, but, you know, coming home at night, having a wife have a meal ready, and it's pretty nice, and go to bed early, go to work the next morning in good shape, you know. And I kind of like that, you know, and I didn't miss that drinking that much. I may get drunk first year I got married, maybe 4 times that year, and the next year maybe 8 times, the next year maybe 12 times, you know. But it was not really a problem. I thought I had put that behind me. It was time for me to get in with business and settle down, get a house, you know, and all that stuff, and that was my goal. And I accomplished part of that. you know. One time I was running around in a Corvette, you know, and the thing was pretty good. But then the kids started to come, and one after the other, and started a business. And I think it's still pretty good, but meeting some more people, and I'm drinking some more, you know. And I should go back a little bit. Our first kid died burnt. And that hit me, you know. And so I got to go get drunk. So I went and get drunk and come back in town. And Sunday my wife is supposed to get out of the hospital. She just lost a kid. She's devastated. I'm in the Tijuana racetrack and I forgot to go get her. And she had to call some neighbor to come get her and bring her home, you know. And I couldn't understand why she was so mad, you know. I had to, you know, try to make some money at the racetrack, you know. And, you know, I just give you an idea of me, you know. And anyway, we end up having four kids, three boys and one girl. And drinking get worse and worse and worse and worse, and I get to a point where you know, I didn't know if I was going to make it home at night or what was going to happen. And I feel like, you know, there's something wrong there. You know, I wake up in the morning, I'm so damn guilty, and I get so much remorse. And they call that the Four Horsemen in the Big Book of Alcoholic Anonymous. I'm real familiar with those guys. Real familiar with those guys. I was raised a Catholic, and I get a conscience that's way too big for me. Way too big. Don't cuss me no slack at all, you know. And I get to a point where I don't like me at all. You know, I just don't like me. And I'd get home at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, drunk, and go to bed, and I wake up at 5, get up at 5, and eat breakfast, and go to work, and I'm going to put a day's work like you have never seen, you know. I walk, do the same amount of work as three men put together, you know, because I want to punish me, you know, and thank God I had the energy to do that, and I never get tired, never had the hangover to speak of, you know. And I later you get a little worse, but you know, I was maybe 30 years old then. I have my own business. I was a friend of mine, and I'm making decent money, you know, and all that. And a typical day for me was I would get up early. I go to El Cajon, pick up my truck. My men had loaded my truck for the night before. I drive up to Camp Pendleton. And I always have a 45-gallon drum in the back of my truck where I put some water to mix some cement with. So I usually throw a six-pack or two in there because you can't buy booze in Camp Pendleton. And that carried me through the day. And I walk until 3:30, then come back, and I start to hit the bar in Del Mar. And never drive here on Highway 8. Never do that. Go to Mission Gorge, you know, to get to El Cajon. There is a lot of bar there, and no cops, and, you know, I knew them all. And by the time I get to El Cajon, I already started to drink, and next door to my shop, there is a bar there, and sometimes I'll sit there welding at night, and the guy will, the bartender next door, pass me a six-pack through the window, you know, so I wouldn't have to walk around. You know, and that was a typical day. And the next day, the same thing happened again. And then I'll get tired. So one night I had to go home early, have a good meal, and rest. And so I could go back to work the next day, you know. And I didn't know what was going on, you know. I didn't know what was going on. I remember that thing that my mother sent me to my room, you know, that I become that I want to be by myself. I didn't need people, you know. I just, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm on my own island, you know. I don't need anybody. And I'm going to take care of business, you know. But that's not working, you know. That's just not working. And I don't know what it is. And after my fourth drunken driving, the judge told me to sentenced me 6 months in jail in the road camp,
And he said, I had the lawyer, and he says, I'm going to suspend that if you're willing to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, how bad can it be in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, if I just go to 8 meeting and have the same value as 6 months in jail? You know? It must be a pretty bad place. I just did not want to come here, you know. But I decided I'll try it. You know, I'm adventurous, you know. I'm going to try see what they have there, you know. And I walked in my first meeting in Spring Valley in October of 1971. And after the first meeting, they had a name for this thing that I had when I was a kid back home, you know, and I couldn't play with my brother. It was called alcoholism. And I hadn't drank yet, but they had a name for it. You know, they give a name to this thing, you know. Alcoholism, that's what I got, you know. It don't have much to do with booze, but I got this thing, you know. And what am I going to do now, you know? I'm an alcoholic, and they gave me some hope in that first meeting, you know. And I bought that big book, and the place in the big book, he said, there is a solution. Wow. You know, for 30 years I've been looking for that, and I didn't know where to look at, you know. And here I am, and they just presented me right there, you know. And there was some guy there that are in this room tonight. As a matter of fact, the first minute he asked me to speak in the meeting, he's sitting right there above there. And I never felt so important in my life. I introduced myself as a newcomer. I think that was my third meeting. And Bob asked me to speak the first one, you know. So I get up and I said, my name is Roger. I'm an alcoholic. I have a wife and I have 4 kids. And my social security is so and so and so. And I sit down. I felt like a prisoner, you know. And I know a prisoner, that's all what you have to do is give your social security and, you know, your number and you're okay. That's all you have to furnish the enemy. And Bob was the leader, and I felt that he stopped the meeting just to talk to me, you know. Because he talked to me for a few minutes, and he made me the promise of Alcoholics Anonymous in his own way. You know, he didn't use the book and read them to me, but in his own way he did that. And for some reason I believe him, you know. I believe that man. He had no reason to lie, and the way it came out of his mouth, he was really believable, you know. You could tell. And he resumed the meeting, and, you know, I went home feeling pretty good, you know, better than when I walked into the meeting. And I keep going to those meetings, and I keep learning, and now I have something to work with, you know. I have a name, that's a disease, that's alcoholism, I know that now. And there is a solution, you know, and I can do that, because everybody else, I met Jewel and some of those guys that had been here before me, and on their face, and they can talk to anybody, you know, and their level of people, there is an Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't believe that, you know. Me, I spend my life looking up or looking down. I never could put people, you know, and that's where I find out, you know, after a while, that I was a weak bully, you know. If you were smaller than me and had you under my thumb, by God, you're going to toe the line. But if you were bigger than me and have more money than me or whatever, more prestige, more education, you know, I look up to you and back up. And I had never had the level of humanity with me. You know, I was always up or down. I couldn't find anybody in my peer, you know. And so I keep coming to the meeting, and I keep learning, you know, and Christmas come along, and I get 5 or 6 weeks sober, and I went to a meeting. They had started Alcatan in Lemon Grove there, and I went to that meeting in the morning about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, and didn't do anything for me.
and I'm thirsty. It's Christmas. I'm thirsty. I want to drink, and I want to drink bad. And I remember I'm driving down Sweetwater Line and the road in Alcohol and Spring Valley, and my mind got disconnected from my body. My car is drifting and it's going to hit some car, you know, and I can't turn the wheel. You know, it's completely disconnected. At the last second, I managed to turn the wheel and get. If the devil had appeared there and said, give me your soul, I'll give you a six-pack, I would say, right on, you know. I would have sold that thing right now for a six-pack of beer. I want to drink that much. And I get home. I had a couple at the house, a Mexican couple. My wife was Mexican. And the man is sitting on the couch, and he's flirting with my big book. And my big book had some marking on it, you know, yellow marking. Place that I thought was important, like the rest it was not. Anyway, there was a line that says, thy will be done, not mine. And I had read that a 100 times, and people had marked that in my book, and that will be done, not mine, no biggie, you know. And this guy asked me, he says, what did that mean? So with the best Spanish that I could manage, I told him in Spanish what that meant, and he dawned on me. If God wants me to get drunk, I can get drunk. If he wants me to stay sober, he's going to have to do something and do it quick because I can't handle it on my own, you know. And by then I had two glasses made to drink, and I hand him one. And I went back to the kitchen. I pulled my in the kitchen sink. And, you know, I had given that part of my life to God. You know, if you want me to get drunk, I can do it. If you want me to stay sober, you better do something and do it now, because I can't. You know, I mean, I'm headed. And we ate that afternoon in Plymouthopoly, and that night I realized I didn't want to drink the rest of the day. That was Christmas Day, 1971, and I haven't wanted to drink since. I haven't had a craving for a drink since. I have wanted a drink since, but I haven't had a craving. You know, and the difference between those two is if you have a craving for a drink and you don't want to drink, you're gonna drink anyway. And if you don't have a craving but you want to drink, you have a good chance you ain't gonna take it. You know, and the difference is amazing. You know, when the craving goes, it's a hell of a lot of freedom. You know, and that's happened to me. People ask me how I did the third step. I didn't do a third step. It happened to me. You know, it just happened like that. And I guess God knew that I was a weak guy or whatever, and he gave me the break, you know, because I needed. And went to work after that, went to meeting, and all, you know, moving around pretty good. And 2 months later, the company that I used to own, I sold it, and I went to work for them. And I had hired a guy a year earlier. I trained him, you know, and then he became my boss because I'm working for him, and he fired my ass. You know? And I get in my car. I'm driving home, and, you know, I get 4 kids to feed and all that. And I look up. I said, God, I hope you know what the hell you're doing. It don't look too good from here. And I went home, and waiting a week, a guy had called me, and he says, I have a big job with McMillan Construction. We have a bunch of houses. If you want to come over and do the job, it's yours. So I had a good reputation as a worker, you know, and I show up every day, and I work hard, and I knew what I was doing. I couldn't get along with anybody, you know, but I did the job, you know. And so I went to work for this guy. And I did pretty good, you know. I was sober and learning how to get sober and working. And Well, I work only for him to do this job, and after that I pack up and I move back to the East Coast where my brother was. I figure, you know, I need some. I had a couple of brothers in Massachusetts, three of them. Two of them are not drunks. They are regular people. They had their own business and their family, and I figure if I go over there and see what they are doing and try to do the same thing, I'd be okay. Well, that didn't work too well for me. I mean, I was there for 6 months, and I packed up, came back to California, and get involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Not just go to meeting, but get involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I wanted to stay sober. And I did a year and a half sober. I did the fifth step with my sponsor at South Bay Pioneer, you know, the best I could. I had done one before, but it was very small. That one I did the best I could. And I was never sure of myself, though. I didn't feel like I understand those steps, you know. And so for the next 15 years, I did the fifth step every 2 years, just to make sure I didn't miss anything, you know. And it took me a year and a half to realize within my gut. I'd go to a meeting, and I'd get up and say, I'm an alcoholic, you know. But I didn't quite understand it or believe it, you know. And after a year and a half, this was settled down inside of me. I'm an alcoholic. I know that. There's nothing I can do about it but do the program. That's the only thing that worked. And I have to do that, you know. And so I did the step. And stay involved, you know. I go to a lot of close men's meeting, and I went to step study because I couldn't talk. I couldn't put a word together. I couldn't talk. I couldn't think of anything to say, you know, to a sponsor. I had a good sponsor, but I couldn't talk to him. I couldn't come up with words. And he talked to me, and I nodded my head, yeah, yeah, yeah. So he didn't know if I was here or someplace else, and just nodded my head, and yeah, yeah. So he didn't have any feedback. He didn't know what I was thinking or anything like that. So I get involved in the step study, and that's where I get my sobriety. That's where I understood the step and better, you know, and I was able to take them. And that's how I really get sober, is through step study. And after initial step study folded, where Jewel and a couple of guys started one in the kitchen of a guy that couldn't get sober in National City, and he had to cook for us once a week. And we really get down to the nitty-gritty of Alcoholics Anonymous on this place, you know. And in the meantime, my kids are growing. Oh, I forgot to tell you about my kid, my oldest. One night I pulled into my house, and the garage door was open. I drove into the garage, and I can hear him run through the house. And he's yelling, Mom, Mom, Daddy's home, Daddy's home. And he pushed the door open, took a look at me, and he said, he's drunk again. He walked away. That broke my heart. I slept in the car that night. I didn't have the gut to go inside the house, you know. And I'm reasonably intelligent, you know. I'm going to think, this kid is never going to say that to me again. And I know I can't quit drinking, so I got to find a solution to that, you know. So I came up with a real bright idea. I'm going to come home later at night, so he'll be asleep, you know, so he won't call me a drunk in the morning. You know, you know how that works. My house was built, most of the house was on wood floor, but the hallway on the first part was on concrete. I come home one night, well, somebody took me home and put me in the hallway, and my wife said, throw him over there. So they did. And my boy, he didn't like to see me sleep in the hallway. So he went to the bedroom, get a pillow and a blanket. And he grabbed my hair, lift them up, and tried to kick the pillow underneath. And that didn't work, so he left my head as much as he could, and then grabbed the pillow and tried to shove it underneath. I get up the next morning, my hair hurting, and I couldn't figure what happened. And my wife told me about it. Well, why didn't you defend me? You know, that kid. That kid is a brute. You know? And, you know, a story like that was kind of endless, you know. And we all have them, I guess. And so, you know, why I was sober when I get sober. I was happy when I get sober, you know. So he could pick in on me like that. And anyway, I... The other part of, I was telling a friend of mine this morning, yesterday, you know, when I started in life, there was three things that were really important to me. Three, yeah. Family, work, and having fun. Having fun means drinking or taking the kids to the movie or whatever, you know, but you have to have some entertainment in your life, you know. And after a while, work become most important because I got to have money for the booze, and the family came in the mill, and then a few years later, he's drinking, alcoholism take hold, and then work, and then the family come last. You know, it completely reversed itself. And my goal on life always had been, you know, I was raised family, like I said, 11. My folks were married all their life, and you know, they knew how to raise a family, and my goal was to raise my family, you know, and be a good man, a good husband, and a good father, you know, and I was falling short of that, and that pissed me off, you know. And the harder I try, the more I fail. So I need alcoholism to, you know, bring me to a level where I can be a father and be a husband, and, you know, on my own, with alcohol, that don't work. And with Alcoholic Anonymous, that worked pretty well. You know, I become a decent father. My wife, that was looking for a divorce when after we were married for 12 years, and the height of my alcoholism, she wanted a divorce. She had a lawyer, and we were talking to him, and the guy keep on telling her, you got a good man there. He bring the paycheck home every Friday. I never cash my paycheck. I bring it home, you know. And even if I was broke, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't cash my paycheck. I bring it home. And so you got a good man there. Hang on as much as you can. But now she had it. And I get sober and screw up her plan, you know. We were married for 40 years when she passed 11 years ago, you know. And thanks to Alcoholic Anonymous, that worked. And we were able to raise our kid. And my kid, they had the teenage year. They were, you know, they tried the alcohol and they tried the drugs and they tried this and they tried that. And, you know, I dug him out of a juvenile hall and I dug him out of a hospital and place, sheriff station, and place where they should not have been. And I thought, you know, we're going to have some problem. And when they became a little older, you know, they turned that around. They just, I get tired of that, you know. What am I doing? I work all, you know, and spend all my money on pots and alcohol and accident, you know, repairing the truck or whatever. So they all quit. And today I have three good citizens for kids, you know, three boys. I lost my daughter 11 years ago. She was 33 years old. She had been working for the post office for 14 years. Her husband was an engineer with the city of San Diego, electrical engineer. They had the house, they had car, they had a horse, they had a daughter. They had everything, they, you know, that a young couple start. She gets sick. They call that chronic depression. And a year and a half later, she killed herself. She went down just like that. And that was devastating for me. I mean, I really took a beating emotionally on that because my daughter and I were real close. And in the meantime, 5 or 6 years earlier, 10 years earlier, my wife had caught Parkinson's disease. And
the last 5 years that she was alive, I had, you know, feed her and clothe her and give her a bed and help her and those things because she couldn't do it. And thank God I didn't live too far from my sister and my daughter. And my daughter had a daughter, and she bring that daughter to my house in the morning, and we hired a maid. And she helped my wife and take care of the kid. And after work, my daughter would pick up her daughter. And the maid stayed there 6 days a week, 5 days a week. And the weekend I was able to take over. And the business that I had by then was easy for me to go home at noon, feed her and, you know, and stuff like that. And so I was able to keep her home for her last. But she died three months after my daughter died. And the year 2000 was not too good. It was not too good, you know. It was pretty painful, you know. But I look at it this way. I lost my daughter. I lost my wife. If I lose my sobriety, I lose everything, you know. And I want to hang on to something, so hang on to my sobriety. I had a choice there. I didn't have a choice on them dying, on, you know, but I had a choice with my sobriety, so I choose to keep my sobriety and go to those meetings and listen to those guys, and they listen to me cry and all of that stuff. And Jules, especially my sponsor, he'd pick me up and take me to those long rides and talk to me and talk to me and talk to me, and I'm bitter and I'm cussing and I don't want to hear what he has to say. And until one day he looked at me, I guess he got tired of me. He said, "You're going to stay bitter for the rest of your life?" Wow. Am I? You know? And that turned me around that day, you know. I started to smile again and, you know, look what I had left instead of what I lost, you know. And life goes on, you know, life goes on. The last 11 years, I retired from the business that I had. My two sons took over the business, and two of my sons took over the business. My other son is in education. He's a vice principal for a school. He went to college and learned, you know, and become a school teacher and all that. So he got a good position today, and he's looking for a job as a vice principal. He thinks he's capable of running a school now, and he's making application and all that. And the other two are still in the fence business, and, you know, they went from employing about 12 guys to one guy. Business is not too good, but they are surviving. They just buy a big piece of property in Spring Valley where they're going to move their business to. They have moved their business to, and they're doing really good. They are positive people. And my oldest son, he's either working or he's at a church. And he learned the sign language, and he's the guy that sit by the priest and sign to the deaf people. And, you know, he don't talk much, but he do that. He's not a talker, you know. He's kind of quiet guy, but he loves to do that, and it's rewarding to him, you know. It's rewarding to him, so he feels good about himself by doing that. You know, we all have a place in life where we can do some good instead of taken from society, we can put back in, you know. And oops, I'm about done, right? I forget. I go by pretty crazy. Anyway, if I stay sober until November, I will have 40 years in this beautiful program. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have not got it made. I still got to practice the stuff. I still got to help people. I still got to do the thing that I was doing 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. You know, I can't lay off. I can't quit. I just have to keep on going, and that's what I'm planning on doing. Thanks for letting me share.